Good day, and welcome to episode 10 of the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. I'm James Gordon, and I'm part of the team behind a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph and beyond. This week, Dawn Owen from the Guelph Civic Museum and Queen Kay from the Guelph Black Heritage Society will be talking about their efforts to document Guelph's history under COVID and the recent protests against systemic racism. They'll also be talking about how the Guelph Civic Museum is working to be more proactive about documenting Guelph's less represented histories. They'll speak about rapid response collecting, the method they are using to gather artifacts and materials that reflect what's happening now in our community. Our moderator is Hina Mistry, who's an historian herself. Here's Hina.
I actually just want to turn it over to both of you guys to talk a little bit about the Rapid Response Collecting Project and what that is and the work that you guys have both been sort of doing collaboratively on the project. So thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Maybe Dawn, I'll let you start off with that beautiful question.
I was going to invite you to start.
I mean, I could definitely.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We're really excited about this rapid response that we have going on through the Guelph Civic Museum and a little bit of an extension into what can come forward out of this as well. With GBHS and the Guelph Civic Museum. For myself, this project is really important. It was a great way to collect artifacts and information from our protest on June 6th here in Guelph. We did have over 8,000 people who came out and over 20,000 in viewing. It was one of the largest historic protests here in Guelph and in one of all of Ontario. So when Guelph Civic Museum reached out about kind of collecting this response and figuring out how we would do that, I felt obliged that this should happen. For myself, I did grow up in the city. I come from a predominantly Italian and Irish family, so I was adopted at a very young age. So what I saw at home is very different than what I see in the mirror. So it was important that, you know, I was learning my background and heritage and culture somewhere else, but I wasn't actually getting that here in Guelph, whether it be my schools and whether or not it be the museums. And Dawn can definitely speak to this, is that I think, you know, Guelph Civic Museum has really recognized their place in this, and that, you know, they have made a really beautiful apology on where they've been in the past and, you know, working to be better in the future. So this is really just the start of collecting some of that Black history and heritage and telling some of those stories through artifacts, digital copies, all sorts of different methods of reproducing what happened on June 6th here with our Black Lives Matter protest.
Thanks, Queen. And I'll jump in sort of with some context around rapid response collecting as a program that really focuses around contemporary collecting. So we branded it under the ID of rapid response collecting to signify that we want to work with our community to actively collect both artifacts that would be held within the museum and then interpreted and displayed over time. But also that we would collect stories. And sometimes stories are independent of artifacts, and sometimes the artifacts really drive the narrative and the expression of somebody's lived experience. So when I joined the museum in 2017, the museum was already on a course toward change. What that means is not sort of getting rid of all of what had happened prior to that moment, but rather looking at our history, looking at the reasons why an institution like a museum was established, looking at its relationship to colonialism, looking critically and thoughtfully at the collection that we had amassed to date, over 40,000 individual objects, all of which are imbued with multiple narratives that are absolutely intersectional, that there's a ton of work there to do in terms of looking at that collection and understanding what it means to us today, identifying the gaps, and in many cases there are massive gaps in the representation of our community, and also sort of being ready and willing to look, as both as a museum team but also as a community at large, to look critically at ourselves and our roles that we play in sort of crafting our stories. And when the pandemic came upon us, of course, like the rest of the world, that was a shock for the organization. But it actually was an incredibly synergizing moment around some of these ideas generated by change. We were all forced to think differently about our relationships to each other, to place, to institution. And Rapid Response Collecting was one of those programs that was sort of on the horizon but hadn't yet sort of seen a public space or a public forum. And so we just essentially, as a curatorial team at the museum, dropped everything else and said, this is what we need to be doing right now. And so we initiated it really in response to the pandemic, interested in not only sort of trying to interpret and collect understanding around what was happening to us today in this moment, thinking about today, but also thinking about sort of future forward 50 or 100 years or further down the line. And trying to really capture that and what that meant as we were living it. And then when the with the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement in its current iteration, and I don't want to suggest that it was that I don't want to for any of us to misunderstand that this is suddenly a new thing. Activism, of course, within the Black community and with frankly within every community of people is a long journey. But there's sort of a crystallizing moment around that. And we thought Rapid Response Collecting can adapt and reflect what that is. And the hope was that the Black Heritage Society in Guelph, and we didn't know Queen at the time, but we met Queen, might just be interested in partnering with us on that goal. And so what I want to say about Rapid Response Collecting is that it isn't a for now program. It's what I think of as a forever program. It sets a new course for the museum and the community to really think differently about the experiences that we're having as we're living them and how we can reflect and document those experiences in a place like a museum.
I was wondering if you could both just explain a little bit more about what exactly is Rapid Response Collecting, because I'm not sure if everybody necessarily listening, all our listeners, understand like what exactly is that process and how is it different from how maybe Guelph's past was collected before or like documented before.
I guess I'll begin then. Thanks for that question too. So Rapid Response Collecting really is what it signifies. Most importantly, it's a difference in the approach or the process to collecting. So I would say that museums, and not just the Guelph Civic Museum, but all museums around the world have typically undertaken what could be called sort of a passive collecting program, whereby we are open and available to community members to come in with their artifacts, with their family heirlooms often, with their sort of at moments of life change, typically this happens. So if there's somebody who's passed in a family and there is a younger generation that has inherited information, histories of their local, of their families and their local relationships, oftentimes what happens in those moments is they look to a place like a museum as a repository for that history. Or in some cases, and this is actually happens more often than we might think. People in the community might see something great that is that they think is significant about Guelph's history. They might encounter that, say, in a private auction, an estate sale, on eBay, on Kijiji, whatever, and they'll say, "Hey, museum, are you interested in collecting this object? This is available. This is an important piece of our local history." But those processes are fairly passive in that the museum itself isn't performing a call or encouraging a certain direction in the collecting. What happens in that instance is that we would, have a, it's a fairly, you know, it's a conversation and a process that we go through. We don't immediately say yes or no to any one thing. We have a curatorial committee that meets and discusses, and we consult experts and other knowledgeable folks around those histories, and then try to make a really informed decision about whether or not we would acquire a certain narrative or a certain object into the collection. But with rapid response collecting, what it does is it sort of shifts the relationship the museum has in that process, so that we're saying, we recognize that there are stories that we aren't yet sharing, that aren't documented within the museum's collection. And we would like to help our community to understand that what they're living today is interesting and valuable to the museum now, and will be interesting and valuable to the museum and the community at large in the long lens, you know, over the long lens of time. That we don't want to miss the opportunity right now to collect both stories and artifacts that can help us to tell this story. One of the things that was a big reflection for us at the beginning of the pandemic was just trying to look in our collection around, you know, prior moments of sort of community-based trauma. So for example, there were, you know, some really difficult moments in Guelph's history around sort of natural disaster, fires, floods, things like that. Also Spanish flu. So, you know, we were having trouble really documenting, really, mining that information from the collection. And so we said, you know, and 100 years from now, if a future historian or citizen in the community wants to know about this particular moment and how Guelph responded to that moment, we want to make sure that we can build into the collection an ability to, for that future historian to really understand what this moment was like, that we have a chance to author that moment right now. So that was really sort of marks the distinction between sort of what kind of collecting would happen at the museum and, you know, historically, and what kind of collecting is happening at the museum now. And I think in the context of the Black Lives Matter movement and other types of activism across the community, and there's so many activists and so many programs of activism that are not reflected in the museum's collection. So working towards those goals as well. And also, we don't want to always be the ones anticipating what is important, right? Or making those decisions. And so working with community in the context of a program like this, hopefully will generate those significances from the community itself and not solely from the museum. Queen, what are your thoughts along those lines?
I mean, Dawn really gave such a beautiful response on what the rapid response is. But, you know, I think it's really important to know that although that rapid is in there in that title, there are a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion around the things that we do accept and why we accept them. And for me, this is a whole new learning experience. I don't come from the world of libraries and historians and museums, but it's a really interesting process to watch. And I think it's really important to know that every part of it is really done correctly at the Guelph Civic Museum. You know, even yesterday, as we were kind of going through some of our pieces, sometimes you realize that you're missing some information, or this could be a little more factual, or this could include this piece of history. And there's ways that you can go back and reach people. So for me, this is actually just this really exclusive way to collect some of our history that also engages our community. And I think that's what I really love too, is we're seeing people that might not necessarily set foot in the Guelph Civic Museum reaching out and being a part of this project. So I'm really excited to be beginning this, and it's only just the start to some more Black heritage and history within the Guelph Civic Museum.
Thanks, guys. Like, it was so, yeah, it's so insightful just hearing about, like, what rapid response collecting is. I kind of wanted to add, I guess, a little side note just about, so, like, again, like, I'm a historian, like, I've done research and everything, and one of the things that you really realize when you start working, like, in archives, or, like, in museums, is how the stuff that ends up in a library or the stuff that ends up in like a record office, it's not neutral, right? And people in the past have taken a lot of work into like shaping what that looks like and shaping what goes in there and shaping what's not in there as well, right? And so I think like it's just really interesting like hearing about how Guelph Museums is trying to like reflect on how that has actually like taken shape in the past and how that, like you, like Don said, like how that's affected what's in there and who exactly that excludes as well and who it includes. I mean, one of the most powerful things though, I thought just after listening to you guys, is just about, you know, how powerful just like authoring things right now is, right? Like how powerful it is to do things like write tweets, write Facebook posts, or, you know, record podcasts like Breezy. Like we are literally creating like documents right now, which, you know, hopefully if they survive like 100, 200 years later, whatever, you know, that this is what's going to reflect, you know, how like future folks see what we were doing today and how they're going to, you know, read up on like what was going on today. So I think it's really powerful also that like we can take that in our own hands and also like tell people and actively like tell people what's going on. So that I wanted to just throw in a question that we had from one of our listeners, from James. James was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about some examples of artifacts and articles that have been collected so far through rapid response collecting.
I mean, definitely. Yes, it's actually perfect timing because yesterday we had one of our first meetings kind of regarding some of these artifacts. I'll speak on this, is that yesterday was actually surprisingly emotional for me, heading into reliving some of the moments of the protest, but also, like Dawn spoke about, is how important those stories are to connection and that emotional connection. And I think for me, one of the artifacts and pieces that really stood out for me were some of our posters, which, as we know, are such a key element to protesting and such a representation of someone's personality or a feeling that they want to exude is through these posters and their protesting. And, I'll only share part of the story, but it was this mom who for me was really relatable because she had an African and East Indian descent. I come from a Jamaican and East Indian. It's really a rare mix, so it's so rare to hear people talk about that experience. And, you know, she just had this really beautiful and eloquent way of telling about her story and telling about her daughter's experience with racism at the age of 4 here in Guelph. And it really rang true to me because I had that same experience at Westwood Public School when I was pushed off the monkey bars and called the N-word. And I was removed from the school and put into a private Christian school. And the story just like seemed like a complete repeat another 20, 25 years later. And I was so emotional yesterday. I was like bawling on the Zoom because it was exquisite to see. I mean, it sucks to say exquisite, but that some of these the things and experiences are the exact same ones we went through 20 years ago, 400 years ago. What we are seeing, though, as if for any of you that were maybe there, is a lot of these Black Lives Matter posters. The pins were really important, along with those shirts. The I Can't Breathe shirt, in addition to the Black Lives Matter shirts, are such an important essence of the Black Lives Matter movement. I think people have this idea that the I Can't Breathe statement came from George Floyd, and it is really important to understand that he did say that, but it's also, the next step is remembering that the I Can't Breathe statement came 10 years previous, and Philando Castile, our Trayvon Martins, are like, there's so many people that this Black Lives Matter movement started a decade ago, and we're still in the same place. So these t-shirts really represent not only this period in time, but the momentum that we had from Charlottesville, the momentum we had from some of the United States and the issues that they were going on. Those are kind of some of your main artifacts, but what I'm also finding is that part of the importance of this Black Lives Matter movement is not only the Black Lives Matter, but the COVID. I think this was probably one of the hardest events, protests, whatever, everything in one that I've ever done in my lifetime because of that COVID element. So, you know, we have signs that have Black Lives Matter or Say His Name or No Justice, No Peace, but then we have signs that have masks and sanitizer stations on it. So it kind of gives you this kind of reflection on really what the times are. It's not just 10 years ago when we were protesting, but rather a very, very new time where we're seeing momentum, change, resilience coming from our community. And Dawn, maybe you want to speak more to some of the artifacts and other articles collected.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would echo all of what you've just said, Queen. The emotional, the weight of that conversation we had yesterday, which really was a direct response to the stories being offered. And, you know, we were definitely considering both physical artifacts, so posters and t-shirts and other materials that had been created both sort of for the march, but then also expressions of individuals in the community who wanted to show their support. So homemade signs, some in very humble materials, other very sophisticated sort of artistic expressions. You know, there were a number of really absolutely stunningly beautiful photographs. I mean, of the caliber of, you know, professional photojournalism kind of caliber, photographic evidence, I'll say, of what that march represented. And, you know, that, you know, so right now we're in a mode where we're collecting physical artifacts, but we're also collecting born digital materials that only exist in a digital space. And that is also a big shift in terms of our approach to collecting. I would say that, you know, in this day and age, we are at the museum creating a lot of digital materials, and but we were not before Rapid Response collecting really positioned to acquire born digital artifacts, which means that they only exist in a digital context, that they don't have a physical manifestation. So one of the things that we looked at yesterday in our first round of submissions was really just these phenomenal photographs. And the other thing I want to reflect on is just how eloquent the folks were who submitted in sharing their stories. That isn't, you know, I think when people come to the museum and they want to share their experience and share their personal stories, they're always earnest and intent. But yesterday what we saw in the submissions was an interest in really expressing very completely the feelings and reflections that these individuals are having in this particular moment. And I was just quite humbled, I would say, and really grateful to the submitters for being so kind and generous. And what that says to me as curator at the museum, to me as an individual in this community, is that we have a great burden of responsibility around the care of these stories. And so what this means for us going forward is that we have to build within our sort of internal museum work and also our public facing work. So whether that's an exhibition or a virtual event or whatever it may be, when we share with community and we gather and when we ask community to come to us and share their stories, that we are building not only a relationship and a journey toward greater understanding, but we're also responsible for men, you know, for caring and preserving for those stories. And not so what we have to do next is sort of, you know, we made some decisions yesterday about what objects are coming into the museum, and by object I mean both physical object and the digital object. But more importantly, what we have to do is a lot of work around preservation of the stories that go with those objects, because it's the stories that we'll learn from over time, and that challenge is one that we have to do collectively and with community. So that is an unwritten part of the story so far in our journey. And as I said, you know, and I think this is really important, and thanks, Queen, for also saying that the rapid response sort of descriptor for this program of work really reflects, you know, that we're listening to what's happening right now and we're learning from what's happening right now, but it's actually a forever journey that we're on. So I think at some point in our, in the lifespan of rapid response collecting, we will shift from, say, pandemic focus or specifically Black history focused, and it will become a contemporary collecting program that really is designed to respond to all of our experiences as we're having them in the community of Guelph. But we're starting in the places that we can, and where the synergies lie. And so right now the synergies lie in this particular focus, but already we're seeing that sort of intersectionality in the stories, with the pandemic, with the Black Lives Matter march. And these are just two very specific stories that we're looking for right now, but there's so much more we need to learn. So.
Yeah, thanks guys. We have a few questions in the audience, but I just had one that I was actually personally curious about, that I wanted to ask first. So I was just wondering, what are some of the difficulties that come with collecting Guelph's history, both previous and current difficulties? And the reason why I ask this is just because I'm thinking about how, you know, how proactively like everyone has been collecting about the sort of June 6th protest, but then I mean, I was also attending the protest that took first on like Canada Day, which is also like quite large. And then, I mean, for those of you who, I know a few who on this call were actually there. But I mean, what happened was basically like, you know, everyone started in a park, one of the parks that was like near Victoria Road, and then, you know, marched all the way to the police station, in which signs with like tombstones with cut out with from like tombstone shapes cut out from basically like wood were stuck into the lawn and the you know, in front of the police station with the names of everyone in the past year who had been killed by police in Canada. Every like person of color who had been like BIPOC person who had been killed by police in Canada. And then within 5 minutes of the crowd dispersing, all of the signs were gone. And then all like the paintings that were like put on the road and the chalk lines and everything were all gone. So I think I really appreciate sort of the proactiveness with which like museums are collecting, but I also wonder, like, with things that are ephemeral like that, or like they're very fleeting and they don't last very long, like how have that's one example, but there are obviously like many situations like that where things are so fleeting and it's hard to like collect them. So how, like, what are some of the other difficulties that actually come with collecting Guelph's past?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do, because we are a community of incredible diversity, and I mean that in the most earnest way possible. I don't want to tokenize that word diversity, but we really are. And the collection at the museum does a good job of telling some stories well. And because the Guelph Civic Museum, like all museums around the world, was born out of a colonial mandate to reflect the success of colonization, frankly, and to document that settlement story. And then a lot of museums got stuck in that narrative, and that's the story that they predominantly share. Guelph Civic Museum also shares that story. It was actually why the museum itself was sort of structured in the first place. But, you know, what you've described, Hina, is a great challenge, not only for museums, but for all collecting organizations. And Queen, you mentioned libraries as well. They're also part of the same system of sort of institutionalizing our cultures. And so where we sit now, I mean, the challenge with sort of, you know, lived experiences as they're happening right now. So to use your example, Hina, you know, you're quite right that there tends to be sort of a focal moment around which people gather, that moment is performed in a host of ways and is supported maybe by performances, expressions, signage, t-shirts, other things like that. But oftentimes in those moments, when that moment has passed, there isn't this sort of necessarily a second act, which is that let's preserve this moment, or how do we preserve this moment? And so what rapid response collecting is trying to do is not only help to grow and extend and more thoroughly reflect the Guelph community, but also to help our community to understand that we all have a role to play in preserving our stories. And even if the museum doesn't play a part in that preservation right now, if we can coach our community to think about their stories as historically important, and we can encourage people to collect their own artifacts and what that means to them over time, that maybe at some point down the line, the museum's path and that person's path will connect. And we'll have an opportunity then to say, they might say, I have these things that tell my story. Would you be interested in knowing about those? To which we will always say yes. It's sort of shifting the dynamic around that and really educating our community around, just thinking about preserving their own experience. And that doesn't have to be, a closet full of objects either. It can be letters. It can be in this digital age. It can be any kind of material being shared online. The challenge with social media platforms, of course, is that they're designed to be temporal, so that if you are somebody who is sharing all of your narrative in that space, I would encourage you to think about how you are archiving that information outside of that sort of social media platform space. And that is a challenge we're looking at the museum as well. We have received submissions through the rapid response call that have been, that are basically were, for example, memes shared on Twitter or Instagram, Facebook threads, that kind of thing. And there's all kinds of challenges around how we archive that content. But at this point in the process, what we really need to know is what are those stories and where do we look for them? And are we able to be in conversation with the authors of those experiences? And it's the authorship piece that is so critically important, because frankly, gone are the days where museums are the supreme authority on what is the history of a place. And we need, this is what this work is all about. This is what this kind of conversation is all about. But we can use the museum's authority for good in that relationship, because one thing that we do well is that archiving piece, that understanding how to map information into a place that is then publicly accessible to the community at large. I know I'm doing a lot of talking, so I want to make space for you too, Queen, in answering that question that's sort of about the temporality of our experiences and how we sort of approach that. Maybe you could offer some thoughts along those lines.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that. I think as Juana here had mentioned that, history is always decided by those who put it in. And I always say, like, history and what we see is always written by the victors, right? And we're really just trying to change that concept on who the victors really are and modifying that for what information goes in. And Hina, I would really like to address the July 1st protest, because I think that the protest is just one step, right? June 6th protest is just one of a small moment in history. And for us at GBHS and the Guelph Civic Museum, which was really key, is not only this rapid response for the Black Lives Matter protests, but rather the expansion into Black history and heritage going forward, which is such a bigger project on top of so many other things, as you know, I'm doing in the background. So I think that's what we realized. It's like, okay, so we have BLM and that's beautiful, but why did we even get to this point and what's happening after that, right? So for me, like, July 1st was an incredibly moving day that needs to be put into the history books. But again, as James here said in this thread, I would have never thought to go to Guelph Civic Museum and be like, this seems like history, let's do it up. I would have never thought that. That's just not where my academic mind sits. So I think that education piece for the city will be really interesting and new, is that our voice matters even in the contemporary time and is a really key element to history. And I think something that might be lost in our generation, because we don't believe we're creating that history, but we are, we're living, we're experiencing it, we're doing it. So it really opened my mind to say, oh, we need to start doing better as a society collecting these things. And for me, it just only made sense. We need to start fighting for our history in there. I needed to start seeing representation that looked like me, that wasn't mammy, and that wasn't blackface or created by colonial artists or what have you, but rather stories from us as well. Because let's be honest, at some point in this city in the 1880s, there was black ancestors and slaves that came through here on the Underground Railroad. And it wasn't until the 1920s that we saw our black people leave. So there is a much bigger conversation to this. And this is the question of why did the black people leave? Where did they go? Who made them go? What happened there? So there's a huge chunk in this missing kind of artifact that I think that we'll slowly find. And the same thing on this kind of Metrolinx Underground Railroad concept, where for sure there's a project in the works. It's just a much bigger project. And the same with that kind of connection to the water and the freedom. That conversation about the water and the land is really important for us as well. And really ties into our freedom project at GBHS. So aside from all these kind of bigger initiatives that we're talking right now, there are all these kind of small ones in the background saying, we need to start covering our bases and act accountable for our actions here in Guelph.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think just drawing from what you both have said, it's I think made us all realize to the degree to which museums and historians and history are spaces of activism, right? Because that is so powerful. Like what gets preserved, that has a huge impact on, the way that the discourse goes moving forward. Because I think Juanita said, it's like, if you don't understand like what the context has been, if you don't understand what's happening, then that affects like what your perceptions are, what your politics are also today. I'm going to jump a little bit to a different topic briefly, just about, because this question has come up a lot in different forms in the chat now, about artifacts in the digital age. So I was wondering if maybe you both could talk, now that you both obviously like have a lot of experience with this now and expertise, but I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what is the definition of an artifact in the digital age? How has that maybe changed nowadays? What does archiving in the digital age consist of? How do you collect things that are online? I know obviously like that's a whole field of like historical study, like people have written books about that. So, but I was wondering if you guys could maybe speak a little bit to that briefly about, collecting in a digital age and what that means, because this is going to be a really important conversation for like us going forward, and that is going to be a good deal of the primary source material that is actually kept.
Shall I begin the party? yes, it's a great question, and I don't have a very complete answer for you, unfortunately. What we are learning is that, let me just use the Rapid Response Collecting initiative as the example. When we triggered that process, it was around about April of this year. And between April and August, what we've seen is approximately 75 individual people reaching out to us with material that they are intent on us understanding and also sharing with us and inviting us to consider as collectible to the museum. Or by the museum. And of those, and so those are instances of contact, not individual objects. So some people have many, many objects and many, many stories that they are intent on us understanding. And so the volume is quite high. But what we're seeing is about 50% of the submissions are still physical artifacts, so traditional physical objects. Or what we might consider over the long lens of time as traditional physical objects. So things like ephemera of your life, photographs are very popular. In this day and age, they're almost exclusively digital in the photographic context. One of the challenges around digital artifacts are really, so I'll start with this. One of the things that we need to know and understand is that a born digital artifact is rendered entirely in a digital space. So there is no physical counterpart. yes, you can print a photograph on photographic paper, and that can be a printed object, but actually what we would collect in that instance is the digital original. Now, of course, the digital original can be replicated, right? So the person gifting that image to us, for example, would retain or could, if they chose to, retain a copy of that object. It's quite easy to understand that and wrap our heads around it when it's a photograph, because we are now practiced as individuals and as a community in digital photographs, or the making of digital images. There is a challenge around that, though, in that not every digital photograph is equal. And I'm sure we're all familiar with this, too, where something that looks great on your screen or on your Facebook feed, for example, oftentimes doesn't actually have enough digital or integrity in the digital file, I would say, for it to be usable in any other space. So one of the things that we're challenged by at the museum is how do we collect a photograph that is imbued with a really important story, if that photograph really can't be used in any other context other than a social media space. So we're asking those questions and trying to create a process whereby we can actually archive, again, for the long lens of time, media or digital media that is actually a sort of an untested medium, right? So we don't know what's going to happen to our digital files 50 or 100 years from now. But we want to set ourselves a course whereby we can do our very best to preserve that material and content. Today, in terms of people creating material, it is almost exclusively digital. So the making of expressions, or the reflection of story through that sort of maker expression. And then there are others, of course, the opposite to that is the artist, whether you're a professional artist or someone who creates, on your own time, and isn't doing that as your main mode of professional practice. People are still making things by hand, and we're also still interested in things made by hand. So it's kind of like, we're just weighing all of that. We're very capable and very practiced in collecting the physical object. We are learning how to collect and understand and interpret the digital object. Hopefully that gives you some more information than you had at the beginning of my description. And Queen, I don't know if you want to speak to this just from the other side of it, because of course you're an artist, you're engaged in a lot of activism that results in expression that I think is probably often shared digitally. So I don't know if you have unique thoughts along those lines.
Yeah, I won't add too much, but rather, we are in a different space, and it actually gives us more ability to share things that we maybe wouldn't have been able to before. And it gives us ability to share expressions that we maybe wouldn't have been able to before. And I think expressions, experiences, and like the soul and the spirit and the gut of the things are part of maybe what's even most valuable out of the stories, right? The guts of it, the stuff that makes you cry, the stuff that makes you laugh. And this is really what a lot of these pieces we've been receiving and went through kind of yesterday make me feel. They make me feel it in my soul, my spirit, and it makes you leave asking more questions or wanting more information. We don't want people ending their conversation at the museum, but rather continue those discussion questions at home.
Thanks, guys. That was really helpful. So the next sort of topic I wanted to speak to, or have you guys speak to, is about public responses to this project, and how have people responded to rapid response collecting, to this sort of like new approach to collections? Has the public engaged in what is sort of like essentially a very community-based movement? How do you get the public engaged in this project during lockdown? What are some of the challenges that come with that, with doing this work at this particular time, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, Queen, I'd love for you to take the lead on this in the context of just how you're seeing rapid response collecting sort of, and frankly, positively or negatively received within the communities that you're in close dialogue with. I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
You know, I think for me, I'm actually seeing quite a positive turnaround. We have gotten not only a certain amount of reach to a certain amount of people, but really good pieces followed with really good stories. So, you know, yesterday it was like, I don't even know if we said no to anything technically, but rather some things that we just need to beef up because people were just not only community members, so our BIPOC community, but our allies were coming out and sharing their stories and experiences so that it could educate others. I think that this city, to me, based on where I've lived, what I've done, is very academic and very always willing to lend a hand or be community driven. I mean, look at the group of people in this conversation right now. And that alone, I think, allows us to share our story. I think it is difficult. I think it's difficult to always get the message out there. What I know as a teacher and a dancer and as somebody who's constantly advertising classes is nobody gives a crap. Nobody cares, right? Everybody's like flipping through a whole bunch of stuff and liking this, liking that. But a lot of the time it takes 12 or 15 minutes of that person seeing it before they clue in to maybe what that statement says. So it might just take a little bit of time. So less rapid, but, you know, rather, you know, putting out the information again, and it might be a whole new set of people, but that's where we use the social media. But I think because of that, like, difference in collecting digital, but also promoting this through social platforms, it allows a different space of historians to come through and submit. I think a lot of the people who submitted yesterday are quite young. A lot of like 30-year-olds, like we're seeing a new generation kind of step up that may have not done before or may have not even thought they had the place to step up within the museums and the libraries and the world of academics. So while there is some challenges during these times in COVID because we can't promote as normal, I think it opens up new doors to the world of Instagram and Facebook, where we reach people who may have not heard about this in the past because they're not connected to this academic world or the newsletters. Like, I don't get newsletters, but lots of people are still on that train. So I think that that's really been interesting for me. I'd love to see a little more collection. I'd also love to see a little more digital collection. I'd love to hear, you know, one of our speakers from that day and a copy of that. So there are some things that I think we still need to kind of beef up. And based on how many people came out, how many people have continued to stay educated. I think Kate Nixon's on here. I see her constantly on threads on Facebook, like telling people like this is wrong and correcting them on the Facebook threads. Like, these are important things to do. And those are important elements of history. Like, I would love to get captures of some of our Facebook groups that went from purely this beautiful community to some of our most racist groups on Facebook. So these are situations we might have not happened before. A lot of those kind of racist conversations happen behind closed doors, but now they're public on forums, right? It changes the element of which we can have discussions. So for me, I'm seeing a big change. I think that people submitted period is a massive start to the change starts now.
Absolutely. And I'll say too that the vast majority, with rare exception, are new people coming to the museum through this program. These are not people who have donated to the museum before. And I would say not only in the context of the Black Lives Matter Rapid Response Collecting invitation, but Rapid Response Collecting from the beginning of that project. So there are some who are in conversation with us through Rapid Response who have a pre-existing relationship with the museum, but the vast majority are new people. So, or new people to the museum community. So, you know, one thing that I was thinking about as I was listening to the questions and trying to follow the chat as well, is just about the museum's role in the community. And that is shifting and changing and being redefined as we grow and learn. You know, there are some people in Guelph for whom the museum has always been a deeply trusted space, a place of scholarship, a place of learning, a place of expression and reflection. The museum, equally to a lot of other people in the community, has been the opposite of that, where they haven't seen themselves reflected in the stories we're telling, where the communities that they come from are not well documented in Guelph's histories. You know, we may have 40,000 plus individual objects in our collections, but they're not telling 40,000 stories. So, you know, I just sort of wanted to share that because I think, you know, it's one of the things that is informing the work that we do at the museum today is really trying to understand what is this place of trust? How do we build relationships with our communities? How do we position ourselves as being open and accessible to more people who don't sort of have an assumed relationship with the museum? And there are many people in the city, I think, who would describe themselves that way, that the museum isn't their first stop to learn about their heritage. I'd like to change that. And I think a program like Rapid Response Collecting reaches toward that goal, but it's a very long journey we're on. A journey without an end, frankly. And I think actually that's the beauty of it, is that we're focused right now on building those relationships and learning collectively and co-creatively. And I hope before long, although I don't have a finite, I don't have actual dates to share with you today, but I hope that we can also collectively work on sort of sharing out to our community some of the results that we've seen already through the collecting process. But I don't want to rush to that place because I think we have a lot of work to do before we're ready to also share that material and do it responsibly and also collectively.
Yeah, thanks, guys. There was one comment that I thought James made, which was really interesting. So he said, in my experience, part of the challenge in storytelling is that people often don't recognize that their stories have value. I thought that was, it kind of draws on what Queen was saying about how, you know, like a lot of times we sometimes think, oh, you know, the things that should go in museum is like, oh, at the end of my life, I'm going to donate my private papers or whatever, right? But the fact that like people are recognizing, like younger folks, you know, who are on like my age and stuff, like recognizing that, you know, like we're also living through this too. And like the voices that we have are also valuable and relevant. I just have like a tiny little anecdote about, I recently met an artist, local Guelph-based artist named Jagdeep Singh Raina, who his uncle is one of the first, I think, South Asians to settle in Ontario. And he actually like did a PhD and master's degree at OBC in Guelph and then faced so much racism here that he couldn't actually like get a job in his field. He ended up like opening a gas station. And so he's been trying to like track down his, you know, the story of his family and trying to see like how it's documented. But a lot of the difficulty that he's encountered and also a lot of the difficulty that like I've encountered too with like my, you know, like seniors in my family is that they don't, like, they might have these, like, interesting stories or amazing stories that they've, you know, they've crossed borders, they've dealt with all these difficult things, but they just think, they don't really, because they've never, like you said, Dawn, like, they've never really seen themselves reflected in these spaces, they don't feel like what they have to offer is of value, and so they don't bother donating things, and then things just end up getting lost, and it's like, I'm getting a little emotional because it is a sad process, because that's how I see sort of these things, like, disappear, right, and how, like, these stories can sort of just be gone so quickly if someone's not being very proactive about it. And again, like the work of GBHS and sort of like recovering these things, like the fact that this church like hadn't, you know, wasn't recognized in the same way, like it was forgotten for a long time. And then finally, like with the active community effort, it's finally like preserved and we finally now like remember these things. I think it really shows like the power of remembering and forgetting, right? Oh, okay.
One question from someone had to do with the how the Guelph Black Heritage Society itself is collecting Black history. And I know that Queen and I and others in our respective spaces are keen to have to share those understandings and to build a conversation that works toward you know, a new kind of relationship so that we can learn from each other and do some interesting and important work. But I'd love, Queen, to hear from you in terms of that history, because I know you have, as you individually, but also as the society, have been collecting those stories. And, you know, they don't live at the museum currently. So,
yeah. Definitely, you know, Guelph Black Heritage is in the middle of our Freedom Project. Hopefully we'll be up and running and grand opening again at end of September. And this also does include a library, which will be linked with tons of history that we've been trying to collect over time. And now let me really be clear that one of the really unfortunate parts about Black history is that the colonial white man loved to destroy anything that had to do with our history. So, you know, it is actually quite hard to find those pieces. And when you do, you're like, I'm gonna hold on to them real tight. So, you know, I do find that there's like a mixed range. We have items and artifacts that come from people who are very much part of the colonial white world. And then we have artifacts that are being made from our roots, from our people. And it's sometimes hard to differentiate those two because we don't have that tracking in history. Like you say, Hina, like, it is emotional because there is this little kind of disconnect between, you know, the ones whose stories need to be told and those who believe that they weren't worth being told for so many years. And now we're trying to fix all that. GBHS has been working pretty diligently in terms of artifact collecting, but a lot of it has been either in partnership with the University of Guelph and some of our like Black to the Past, some of our walking tours, which is a really interesting story about some of the Jewell family and the history of the 1880s leading up until now. We do have some old artifacts that we're working on kind of getting information on that have been sitting at GPHS since the dawn of time and need some explanation around them, and things that we've also found in like walls within the GBHS during some of this construction period. So we are seeing quite a lot of artifacts. It's just a matter of collecting them. And I would also really love to say to you guys, like, if you're out and about and you hit an antique shop or a value village and you see artifacts or pieces of art that are destructive, I really ask that you spend your money on them and purchase them and then put them back into the hands of the Black community. And the reason this is that we do want to make sure that those artifacts are being used for good and rather not for the, you know, unfortunate racist plurals that there are happening out here. So because it's out there, like every time I go to an antique shop, I'll find something blackface and I try to purchase it and keep it stored in my house for later, or, you know, parts of those stories are important, but it's also important that they're coming from the right people.
That's all for today. As usual, our guests had a lot more to say, but we had to squish it in to the confines of this broadcast. Thanks to our guests, and as Queen just requested, I hope you'll consider taking part in this remarkable and important project. Special thanks, as always, to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Ault, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gevert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions, or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. Thank you for listening.